We thank you for listening to the weekly sermon of First United Methodist Church, Missouri City, Texas. We're a church that's making disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world. For more information about the church and its ministries, or how we can pray for you, visit us on the web at fumcmc.org. If you desire to make a quick contribution in support of our ministries, you can text to give. Simply text the amount you want to give to 281-369-4870 and follow the instructions. And now, as you listen, we hope that you find this podcast meaningful and transformational in your journey of faith.
Well, just so you know, and if you've been around here, the church, for a while and been around me, then this isn't going to surprise you, but I have a real hard time remembering things. I mean, and I just don't. I've never have, and I've determined that there are going to be things I'm just not going to remember. And I'm not, I could forget anything. I may not remember your name, and that's okay, right? I'll figure it out. I might not remember your face. I might not remember a phone number or an anniversary or a birthday. I have to write everything down on my calendar so I don't forget a thing, and then I have to make sure that the alarm goes off on my phone so I don't forget a thing, so I know when birthdays and anniversaries and when I'm supposed to make a phone call and where I'm supposed to be, when I'm supposed to be there, or else I would forget. I am like that little boy who always left his toys in the driveway, and his mom would lose her mind. And one day, she would just pick your toy, and one day she backed the car out, ran over a toy, and she lost it. And she's yelling at this kid, and the kid's eyes just fill up with tears. And says, "But Mom, I just have a good forgetter. I have a good forgetter." Any other good forgetters here? Good. Good. I can't wait to get, like, older. Then I can say, you know, I'm just old. But I've been that way since. Ask my mom. She used to say that I would forget my head if it wasn't attached to my shoulders. And when I find comfort, is that these people that God chose to be in special relationship with him, the Hebrew people, the Jewish people, the people of Israel, they have the same problem. They were good forgetters. They couldn't remember a thing. And so what God did is God put in motion, set in place certain tools, words, prayers, offerings, so that they would remember what God wanted them to remember. And especially in this thing called the offering. And God set up a liturgy. Now, liturgy simply means work of the people and sometimes gets a bad rap, but liturgy is good. Because see, what liturgy does is liturgy gives me something, words to say when my heart doesn't feel like saying it. Liturgy reminds me of where I've come from and who I am and who I belong to. And so God gave this liturgy to Moses to give to the people so they wouldn't forget. And so we're going to look at this, and it's in the book of Deuteronomy. Now, Deuteronomy is the fifth book in what's known as the Pentateuch, first five books of the Bible. Most important books of the Bible to the Jewish person. In fact, there was a time when a kid at the age of seven would begin memorizing the Pentateuch, word for word, in Hebrew. And Deuteronomy simply means the second law, because the first law was the Ten Commandments. And that what I love about this book is it's based on three sermons that Moses gives to the people of Israel as they are about to enter into their promised land. The first four chapters are Moses reminding the people how disobedient their ancestors were, and that's why they wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. Books 5 through 26 are all the laws and obligations that they are to follow when they enter into the promised land. Right? And then 27 and following is what happens to you if you don't, or if you do. If you're obedient, what happens? If you're disobedient, what happens? So that's this book of Deuteronomy, and it's a wonderful book, and it's not as good as Leviticus, but it's close. Because Leviticus is the best book in the Bible. In fact, we're going to do a Tuesday night study on Leviticus for 6 weeks, so that you don't get a 52-week Leviticus sermon series. So take it 6 weeks, 52 weeks. You choose. Choose this day which one. Because I've been dying to do a Leviticus series here. Just saying. So anyhow, this book of Deuteronomy, and Moses is talking, and we're going to pick it up in the 26th chapter, the last part of the book of regulations and laws and things they're supposed to follow. 26th chapter, verses 1 through 10. And this is where I'm going to mess you up, Tom. I'm sorry. When you have come into the land that the Lord your God has given you as an inheritance to possess, and you possess it and settle in it, you shall take some of the first of all the fruit of the ground, which you will harvest from the land that the Lord your God has given you, and you shall put it in a basket and go to the place that the Lord your God will choose as a dwelling for his name. And you should go to the priest who is in office at that time and say to him, today I declare to you, the Lord your God, that I have come into the land that the Lord swore to our ancestors to give us. Okay? Beginning of the liturgy. When the priest takes the basket from your hand and sets it down before the altar of the Lord your God, you shall make this response. Now, I want to stop there. Because see, if you put this into context of the Deuteronomy part that we're going over, which is the laws and the obligations and how you're supposed to be when you enter into the promised land, it sounds to me as if God is saying to give your first fruits, not willingly, but almost legalistically, that if you don't give your first fruits, this is what's going to happen to you. Bad things. Now, I had a problem with that. And partially because I heard too many preachers abuse this by saying, if you don't give, if you don't tithe, you're robbing from God. And that is not, but that's what it sounds like. But that's not the point. See, what God does not want us to give the first fruits, the best of the best that we have, out of obligation or out of duty, or out of fear, or out of guilt. He doesn't want it to be like writing a check to the IRS on April 15th. That's not how he intended it to be, and we're going to see that when we do the next part of the liturgy, okay? All right, so 26, verse 5. Before the altar of the Lord, you shall make this response before the Lord your God. My father was a wandering Aramean. He went down into Egypt and lived there as an alien, few in number. And there he became a great nation, mighty and populous. And when the Egyptians treated us harshly and afflicted us by imposing hard labor on us, we cried to the Lord, the God of our ancestors. The Lord heard our voice and saw our affliction, our toil, and our oppression. And the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand and outstretched arm, and with a terrifying display of power and with signs and wonders, he brought us into this place and gave us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. So now I bring the first fruit of the ground that you, O Lord, have given me. And you shall set it down before the Lord your God and bow down before the Lord your God. And that's the offering liturgy. And it all begins with this absolutely bizarre statement. But I think it's one of the most powerful in Scripture. When you bring your first fruits, when you bring the best of the best that you have, and you hand it to the priest, and you offer it onto the altar, you are to start the offering by simply saying, my father was a wandering Aramean. Now, isn't that great? No? Nobody? Just me? See, because you don't understand the power of that one line. See, the people forgot, and God said, I don't want you to forget where you've come from. And so when God says, you are supposed to bring your offering and declare, my father was a wandering Aramean, what you're doing is you're remembering your past. And the past of the Israelite people was not, well, it didn't start off that great. Because the wandering Aramean was a guy named Jacob. If you know anything about Jacob, you would have to say Jacob is a scoundrel, right? Most of his life, he was conniving and ripping people off. Jacob literally translates to something like the grabber, because he was second of twins, and he came out grabbing Esau, which means the red hairy one, Esau's heel. So Esau was the eldest, Jacob was the youngest. And according to Jewish law, the eldest received the blessing from the father, the eldest received the inheritance. But Jacob, through a series of incredible events, right, he robs it from Esau. Esau loses his mind. Jacob runs scared to death, and he keeps running until he finally wears out. And when he wears out and he can't run anymore, he lays down. He uses a pillow, a rock for a pillow, and he goes to sleep. And God speaks to him in this incredible dream of angels going up and down heaven. And God, Jacob wakes up and says, wow, God must be in this place, so I'm going to name it Bethel, house of God. And the transformation begins to take place. And then the liturgy continues after saying my father was a wandering Aramean, continues to bring the history of the Israel people and how God delivered them time and time and time again. And it talks about the Red Sea and talks about the manna and all that that happened in the wilderness. And it's all a way for God to remind his people that when they come and give, it is not about legal. It is not about obligation. It is not about duty. It is not because you have to. It has to be because you want to. And for the Jew, by starting the offering that way, they were remembering that at one time in their history, they had nothing. And that God delivered them from slavery to freedom, from poverty to prosperity. And so they offer this first fruits, the best of the best, as a way of responding to the grace God gives. They do it so they will remember who they are, whose they are, where they came from, and that they will remember that their life is not their own. Now, I have a good forgetter, and I sometimes forget that my life is not my own. But sometime in November, I was reminded of that. I was taught, the person who taught it to me is this young lady. I thought 27, she's 28. She looks 27, though, right? She looks so young. She's a server at this place called 8th Row Flint. And Jill and I were training for the half marathon. We didn't train, well, we really didn't train. Yes or no? We sort of trained, yeah. Mom would say mensa mensa. So we sort of trained. But one of the things we like to do on Sunday night when we do our long runs is we would pick a place we want to eat. And that's kind of like the inspiration to get through the run, right? If I finish the run, I can eat. It's how Jill got me to run. You can eat if you run. And so this night we were running through the heights and there's this place, that 8th Row Flint, that Jill had been wanting to try. And I'm just going to be honest with you. Sometimes when we eat, we have an adult beverage. And this place was a place that served adult beverages. In fact, the food came from a taco truck that was parked next to it. Now, wait. But the taco truck, this is why we went. It belongs, one of Jill's friends at MD Anderson is a pharmacist. And her husband is a trained executive stud chef. And I guess he got tired of the restaurant business, and he just said, you know what, I'm going to open a taco truck. And it's the best tacos ever, right? So anyhow, so we're sitting outside. It's a chilly night, and we're sitting outside. The place is really dead, and this really cute young lady comes up to take our order. And, you know, I am just a shy person. But for some reason, I struck up a conversation with Aston, and we started talking, and found out she was running the same half marathon we were running, but she ran it much differently. See, by the time we finished, she had already gone home, showered, and eaten brunch. You know, she did an hour and 53 minutes. I mean, you know, like, wow. And so anyhow, so we started talking about that, and then we're talking about her job and this long story. And so anyhow, I find out in the midst of this conversation that waiting tables is not her regular job. She waits tables two different places, but it's not her regular job. So I went on the limb and I asked her, so Aston, what is your regular job, right? And she says, I'm an elementary school teacher for a Title I school in the heart of the city of Houston. And so my mind goes, well, she's a millennial. You know, they're supposed to just think about themselves. So my mind thinks, well, she just wants to buy a better car, live in a better place, you know, go on better trips, because that's what 20-somethings do, except this one. Because when I asked her why, she said, well, I work here in the other job so I can earn money, so I can buy stuff for my kids. And all Jill and I could say is, wow, who does that? Work all day with a bunch of kids, go home, change clothes, and then go wait tables, so that she can take the money she earns there and give it to help her kids who have nothing. So I asked her, so what are you trying to save money for now, raise money for? And she told me, well, I'm $400 short, and I'm trying to get the Natural Science Museum, whatever, to come to my classroom. And I said, look, I know I'm weird, and I'm strange, but I'm not a freak. So do you trust me? And I told her I was a Methodist minister, and I think Jill looked trustworthy, and so she trusted us. She gave me her name and her phone number and email address. I said, I want to take care of that. We're gonna get the $400. So I text Rocky the whole story, and I hope Rocky can read text, because it was a long text. And bottom line was, I need $400 from taco sales. I mean, I figured I kind of earned that. I pushed the taco sales real hard, and, you know, and I buy tacos. And he didn't even hesitate. I mean, Rocky was just, let's do that, because that's who he is, which is why he's so mission-oriented. And so on top of that, Leah had collected a bunch of books to give to this one elementary school that got flooded in Harvey. And she had a bunch, right? And she delivered half of them to the school, and the school didn't need any more. So the other half, 7 big containers full, were just sitting in the office hallway. And so I asked Leah, can I have those? And I text Aston. I took pictures. I said, do you need these books? She just went wild. Yes. And it was before Christmas, so she was already thinking of how to give them out to other teachers and to kids. And it was just, so I said, okay, we're going to come meet you at your house, and I'm going to deliver these books. So I load them in my Jeep, and she comes out of the house. She lives around the corner from me and Jill, or Jill and I. And we give her the $400 check, and she gets teary-eyed, and we give her the books, and her question, why are you guys doing this for me? And I said, well, that's just kind of the church we are. I mean, right? That's who we are. That's why I love this place, because that's who we are. And so we give it to her, and well, we'll go back to that, because then I tell her later, I said, look, I need you to make a wish list of what you need. Right, and so she sends me this like really weeny thing, like you know, things like, oh please, I'll just go down to Walgreens and get that. Give me something. Think, dream big. Well, she took that to the nth degree, and she said, okay, I need 22 laptop type computers, because Houston doesn't give us those, and it'd be great for my kids. So okay, she thought a little big, but I'm gonna do that next. That's my next project after this project. And then she also said that, you know, every Friday she sends home healthy snacks with her kids so that during the weekend her kids would have something to eat, because they're all on breakfast and free lunch, and on weekends they would go without. And so I thought, well, here's this girl who's waiting tables so she can buy peanut butter crackers and granola bars and whatever for kids to send home, and I'm sure her friends are tired of her harassing them for more food. And so I thought, we'll do that, because that's the type of church we are. And so we're doing this collection, and my goal is, we bring it all in on February 4th, and or sometime before February 4th. And on February 6th, I want to load up my Jeep and then take it to her house and fill her Civic with so much stuff that for the rest of the school year, she can send things home with her kids that she's not paying for. And I told you this whole thing for this one line. When we delivered the check and the books, Jill looked at her and said, "Why do you do this?" Because that's important to Jill because she works with some really good PAs that she supervises, and they're all 20-something and early 30-something, and they make good money. They don't do this. And Aston's answer, I will never forget. And she just looked, and she, you know, she didn't make a big production out of it, didn't sound righteous or holier than thou. She simply says, "Well, my life is not my own." That's generosity. See, the thing that God wanted the Hebrew people to remember when he started with, "My father was a wandering Aramean," is that their life was not their own. Without him, they had nothing. We're in the middle of a series called Radicalis, which means from the roots, where we're trying to figure out how do we get back to the root of what it means to follow Jesus, how to strip away all the stuff the church has added to it and get back to that which is most important, right? And what I realize is generosity is not just one of those. It is the one. Because, see, when we become generous people, you know what happens? We don't go back to what it means to follow Jesus. We go all the way back to creation in Genesis 1 and 2 when God said, "Let us make man and women in our image." Because the image of God that we are created in is this image of generosity, because we have a generous and a giving God. And so when we give, when we are generous, we are living into the image of our Creator. You want to know why people who give are just so happy all the time and joyful, and why they can run an hour and 53 half marathon? Because the more we give, the more generous we are, the more like God we become. I have never met a grumpy, generous person. When we are generous, we begin to look like the God who created us to begin with. Generous with our finances, generous with our time, generous with our mercy, with our forgiveness, with our graces listed. Because our God is defined by the way he gives and the way he loves. You know, Matt, I was thinking next week when we do this covenant card thing, and you have them in your bulletin so you can see what they look like. You're going to get something in the mail this week. Next week, you'll get it all. But I was thinking next week, you know what we should do? When we come forward for communion and we come forward to lay our covenant cards on the altar, I think the liturgy should be, "My father was a wandering Aramean." And with those words, we'll remember where we came from, who we are, and whose we are. And when we lay that card on the altar, when we receive the bread and the juice, then we might remember the heartbeat of what it means to be a follower of Jesus. That my life, your life, is not your own. Now that's radical. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. And would you receive this benediction? And now may the Lord bless you. May the Lord keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. And may the Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace both now and forever. In the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, go from this place. And may the peace and the love and the grace of God go with you. And may you know, may you remember, may you never forget that there is nothing you can do, nothing, nothing, that will make God love you less. Because when God sees us, he doesn't see the mistakes that we make. He simply says, wow, you're nothing but the best of the best of the best. And can you imagine what your day would be like if you lived it believing that? You'd have a pretty good day. See you tonight, 5:30.